Siéntese, por favor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. This is the monthly financials update presented by Donna Mills and Mike Smith, our assistant treasurers, assisted by Drew Phillips.
Good afternoon, Donna Mills. Europe's spiraling debt crisis shook investors and spurred market volatility here in the U.S. Domestic macroeconomic indicators are mixed, but still consistent with a slow economic growth outlook. GDP growth at a 1.9% annual rate for the first quarter is at the lower end of the Fed's latest forecast. Yields on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note moved lower in recent weeks on weak job reports and Europe's problems. We expect intermediate to long-term interest rates to stay low through year-end. Recent weakness in some key economic data serves to highlight the uneven and irregular nature of the current environment, tempering our expectations for improvement in our sales tax revenue. On the positive side, though, lower long-term rates continue to provide refunding opportunities. Looking at our monthly boardings, in April, system boardings declined compared to prior year. However, fiscal year to date, boardings are 1.9% ahead of last year. For the month of May, fare revenue was 2% higher than last year, but is essentially flat on a year-to-date basis. Prop A receipts in June of $62.6 million are $7 million higher than receipts in June 2011.
Since last update, we've obtained 90-day extensions to our expiring liquidity facilities for our Prop C 2009 bonds. This will preclude any complications or expense in the event that the planned bond refunding is delayed. For our requested TIFIA loan for the Crenshaw project, USDOT recently provided a term sheet that was significantly different from our term sheet submitted last November. We subsequently had several conference calls with USDOT to resolve the terms and also submitted our revised term sheet to them. While some progress has been made, significant issues remain unresolved. During May, the Pension Plan Administrative Committee approved updating several actuarial assumptions. The most significant change lowered the discount rate used to value the liabilities to changed it to 7% from 7.5%. This will result in the need for additional contributions going forward. Following receipt of board approval in June, we'll refund the Prop C 2009 bonds to a fixed rate from their current variable rate mode. This will eliminate the need for liquidity facilities and will generate savings of several million dollars over the life of the bonds. Related to our TIFIA loan application for the Crenshaw project, we'll work with USDOT to achieve appropriate terms for the loan. In June, we're requesting board authorization to execute loan documents once terms are agreed upon. And in June, we'll hold the initial meeting of the Crenshaw Project Corporation, which is the special purpose corporation that will enter into the loan with the USDOT. Application for the TIFIA loan for the Westside project will be deferred until November and will be submitted if the Measure R sales tax has been extended. And that ends our presentation.
Mr. Najari, do you have any comments, questions?
Can you comment on the Fed's actions today and what that portends for the future? Would that in any way affect the they didn't do anything concrete. They sort of indicated a desire to perhaps add some additional stimulus to the economy. What would that portend for our rates? And if anything, they're already quite low. Do you foresee that as causing any significant effect on the analysis that you just gave?
In terms of rates, I don't really see that as driving any significant difference in the short term, at least.
Okay. As you know, sir, the Fed rate right now is zero, so they can't make it any lower. They have long said they're intending to keep it that way through the end of, I believe it's through the end of calendar year 13, so that's a long-term commitment. In the 10-year rate, which is the one that impacts our doing business in terms of refunding and the like the most, I think we're seeing that that is more heavily impacted by what's going on in Europe right now than the Fed. The Fed has basically stayed the same for the last three meetings. They haven't really done anything. They've talked a lot, but they've not changed anything. They've not added or threatened to contract the money supply. And we don't expect them to do that anytime soon.
Can you go back to your slide presentation, please? And let's go back to the revenue, fair revenue, and the boardings. Can you kind of restate what you said about the boardings?
So boardings for April were actually declined compared to last year, boardings in April of 2011. But on a fiscal year-to-date basis, the boardings are ahead of last year.
On a month-over-month, the boardings are down.
Yes.
But if you take the entire fiscal year, they're up. So in the previous month, they must have been higher. Higher than they were.
Yes. Well, for the month of April, they were higher.
Right. And that offset, is that what made it better for the entire fiscal year so far?
Yes.
And that's a good point. So why is that? I mean, we had such good, good ridership.
Looking back, actually, the whole since August of last year, significantly higher than fiscal year 11.
I think as you look at the chart.
Terry, wait a minute. The first thing you have to look at, and we can pull this, because a month is a short period of time, 30 or 31 days typically, they have different number of weekend days. Saturday ridership is typically about two-thirds of what weekday ridership is, and Sunday ridership is about half or two-thirds of what that is. So if you happen to have a month that has more Saturdays than Sundays, believe it or not, that can make a difference. So, you know, that's why a longer period of time gets you a more reliable assessment of what's actually occurring. Terry, go ahead, please.
On the chart, the blue bars are last year, and you can see that last year for the April, May, and June, March, April, May, and June last year were higher than the beginning of last year, which was July, August, and September. So, as Donna said, in the year to date, and as you can tell, in each month, the difference is not very significant. So, year to date, we're about 1% over last year.
So, we had five Saturdays in the month of April and five Sundays. So, does that play into what he's saying?
Yeah, I think so.
We didn't say that. We can certainly go back and look, but as Mr. Leahy states, that clearly has an impact on a very limited look, like a month. It really does depend.
You know, there's another variable, which it seems inconsequential, but it isn't, just over the decades that I've noticed. If you have a rain day, you know, when we look at monthly ridership, we look at how many weekend days there are and how many rain days there are. In the East Coast, ridership increases on the rain day. Out here, that ridership tends to drop during a rain day.
So if we can go back to the revenue, what percentage change did we see in the revenue?
The fair revenue for the month of May was 2% higher than prior year, and on a fiscal year-to-date basis, it's about 0.17% higher.
So are we overall getting more riders overall for the year?
Oh. Yes. Overall, more riders and slightly less revenues. You also remember that back in August of 2011, we reduced the price of the day pass from $6 to $5. We introduced a $1 student fare, which is a $1.50 to $1 reduction, as well as introduced rolling 30 and 7-day passes, which work to the rider's advantage because they're not tied to the calendar month, so they are more able to balance their purchases with their actual usage pattern.
So because of the price reduction in the fare, even though we have more riders, we're collecting less revenue.
Not as much as the ridership would otherwise indicate, yes.
Is there any look been taken at the actual enforcement of the fares?
Those reports are made to the System Safety and Operations Committee by the LA Sheriff's Department regularly. I can't speak to that, but.
Does your shop check in with them to see what their enforcement level are, or is, rather?
We say abreast of the reports, and they, you know, the details of their fare checking and things are a regular component of their monthly report. I guess that's a long way of saying I don't think they've changed their fare enforcement techniques significantly from last year to this.
The reason, you know, I'm just kind of concerned about it, you know, when I was going through the budget deliberations, the staff showed that there was going to be a deficit that we're going to be looking at starting the end of 2016. And I'm just kind of concerned about what we're going to do, what are we doing now to avert a deficit. So I think it makes sense for you or your shop to communicate with the sheriff to see what their level of enforcements are, so we can see is that an area that we have leakage, because as I ride the system, and I have been riding it, I see a lot of folks who don't tap, and I see it on the buses, see it on the trains.
The bus operator is the first line of fare checking. And as far as I'm aware, we don't have the sheriff overlooking that. Clearly, from time to time, a bus operator will call in to the sheriff's department when a patron gets into a situation with the operator over the actually non-payment of a fare. That probably happens 5 to 10 times a month.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Fasano, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Ms. Molina, welcome. I didn't see you coming here.
Yeah. I extend the apologies as well. Just a question as we look at our picture. On a cumulative basis, how much have we taken in terms of revenue from Measure R since it was passed? And how much of that remains in reserve and how much has been spent?
Don't have that number for you today. I can certainly get it to you by the end of the day.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Mr.
Chair, thank you. I was going to do this under CEO's report, but it's more appropriate, I guess, to make it now. I was just looking at some ridership figures, cumulative figures. This is a little bit of a preview. I expect that by the end of this month, the end of the fiscal year, we will have achieved the highest rail ridership, more than 100 million boardings, in the modern history of rail in Los Angeles. We're not yet to the levels that existed during World War II, but we're beginning to get within eyeshot of them. 100 million boardings on rail is a very good figure. It's about 6% higher, more than 6% higher than last year. And, in fact, three of our rail lines, the gold, the green, and the blue, have their highest ridership in the history of those individual lines, just comparing themselves 1 year to the next. And the red line, the subway, actually should end up the year at very close to, right at its all-time high, which occurred in 2010. So we're seeing the results that I would hope to see based on our investment in reliability and cleanliness and maintenance and the like. That number, by the way, I've not commented on the Expo. There is no historical comparison for Expo yet. It's too early. Bus ridership is up around 1% on the current year. So we'll continue to monitor that, and we'll keep the board posted. Thank you.
Mr. Fasano, did you have another comment?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Mr. Leahy, I'm pleased to hear that our ridership is up on both the bus and the rail. But I see a trend that's started although our ridership is up, our revenue is not. So that tells me there's a gap somewhere there. I'm not sure what's causing that gap, but I think it's something we need to take a closer look at as to why our ridership is up and our revenue is down. When I last talked to our staff about the fare box recovery, it was less than 30%. In fact, I think it was less than 27%.
26, yeah.
In that range, yes.
I can recall 20 years ago, it seems that our fare box ridership at that time, the recovery was more like 38%. And I remember Santa Monica at that time, I thought they were more like 51%. Can you speak to the issue of our fare box recovery as compared to the rest of the region?
Rest of the region?
Yes, this region, yes. Here, the other muni operators.
As far as the information that we get from the munis, I would tell you that our fare box recovery is higher than everyone else, with the exception of Metrolink.
Mr. Chair, on a larger basis, if we look at the five or six biggest cities in the country, we have the lowest average fare, the lowest boarding load policies, and the lowest total fare box return as a function of our policies. I was just at a conference in New York where there were people from large cities from around the world, Santiago, Chile, and Mexico City, Madrid, New York, Hong Kong. Of those 12 cities, we had the lowest average fare of all of them except Mexico City, which is lower, but we had the lowest fare box return of all of them. In fact, our fare box return is about two-thirds or half of what Mexico City is. So what we have here is a set of policies which have established relatively low passenger load standards and fare box return levels. Now, the board policy is to take that up to about a 33% figure in the coming years. Now, we'll see whether that occurs or not. That'll be a function of also looking at other sources of revenue, for example, Union Station, as things advance there. We'll look at fare structure, perhaps distance-based fares and the like, but that would be an issue that we'll be coming to the board and discussing in the coming year.
Well, that's a bit troubling that we're the lowest. You know, and I hear these arguments all the time from certain interest groups saying that, you know, our rates are too high, our fares are too high, but in reality, it sounds like we're way lower.
We are.
And they would say that it is best to be the lowest.
I think that's a good goal. However, if you can't operate, you're out of business and no one gets a ride. Ms. Molina,
yes, sir.
Do you have any comments on the financial reports? Okay. Thank you both, all three of you, all four of you.
Can I just say one thing? Every time
sure.
we get this fare recovery thing, which we've got for the last 10 to 15 years, there's never any way to change the equation on it.
I think there is a way to change it.
No, there isn't. I've asked the same question. That's why I didn't have anything
to say. No, you're asking the wrong people.
Well, I know we've had some discussion on that effect, but I just mentioned distance-based fares. When we come back and start talking about the budget in a year or two, we will talk about the base fare. We'll talk about the multiple for
the
monthly pass.
That's an easy way to do up the fare.
So
that's not
well. So I'm listing a variety of components of the discussion, such as distance-based. You know, there could be peak hour fares. There could be any number of things. And we will array those options for the board and request direction.
Thank you.
And if I may, we're bumping down against the floor, are we not, of the FTA minimum requirement? There's a minimum requirement for fare box recovery, which is 20% or 15% or?
State requirement.
The state, yeah.
So we're close to that as it is. I mean, we're sort of bumping around.
I think it's there's Santa Clara is lower.
Not at Orange County is also lower. 20%.
I think what it does do with the FTA is what they do on all of our capital project contracts is they will evaluate our financial plans and our financial vitality. And if they believe that we are not stable, then that would be a reason not to fund a project. And so they may not have a hard and fast rule, but in the end they will do a financial capacity assessment. And it's very important that they believe that we have a reliable, sustainable financial plan.
Well, you know, board members, I know all of us are deeply concerned about the projects that we have outlined in the long-range plan, specifically those that are being funded by Measure R, and we're going to have to change this trend if we are going to be able to convince our state and federal partners to help us out with some of these projects. If we continue to operate with these low fare box recovery ratios, then it's going to be harder and harder to convince others that we can operate these systems as we build them. So I think it's going to require some hard choices on board members to look at a variety of options, some of which are distance-based fares, enforcement, even consider fare increases for certain population segments. So I think we have to really get back and be responsible. We all want the lowest fares possible. At the same time, we have a duty to have a system that's going to work and that's going to be there for the folks who need it the most. That would be my comment. Mr. Fasano.
You know, I think many of us have this concern when it comes actually time to voting for the fare increases. That's where the rubber seems to hit the road. And, you know, it's an unpleasant aspect for any of us. We know that, frankly, it does affect some riders more than others. But the reality is the board as a whole needs to decide whether they want to add more service or use additional revenues that could be used to improve service or expand service to pay for levels that otherwise could be supported.
Well, I'd like to work with you on coming up with some ideas on how we can address this and turn the trend around to at least something that's more comparable to other major transit properties throughout the nation and certainly across the world. With that, are there any other comments from the board members on this segment of our committee report? If not, thank you again. Okay. Next item. And Madam Chair, I think we do have a quorum now. Madam Secretary, made you the chair.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ruth Holden, the auditor for the agency. And this afternoon, I'm presenting the results of our annual agency-wide risk assessment and the proposed audit plan for fiscal year 2013. This is the sixth year that we've presented the agency-wide risk assessment to the board. And a risk assessment basically is a process of compiling all of the strategic, operational, compliance, and financial objectives and identifying and prioritizing potential threats or risks that may inhibit successful achievement of those objectives. Risk assessment methodology that we use this year is very similar to last year's. However, we changed some of the reporting of risk to coordinate with the current strategic goals of the agency. And risk assessment continues to place a strong emphasis on the agency's internal control framework and its vulnerability to fraud. This risk assessment environment basically continues to evolve. It's not stagnant. We accumulated the risks into 17 different categories, which includes the five outside agencies that receive significant funding from the MTA. This year, as in last year, we've identified two risks that whose scoring impacts multiple organizations across the agency. The first one is the lean internal staffing and increased efforts for Measure R projects have been pervasive concerns in most of our risk assessment discussions across the agency. Until recently, succession planning hadn't been a focus, but under Mr. Leahy's leadership, there has been renewed interest in this. But succession planning is still in early stages at the MTA. Some departments have been early adopters, but other departments have not focused on new leadership development, and this could impact successful completion of projects in the future years. The other pervasive concern or risk is related to the key information systems. We did an IT risk assessment a couple years ago, and we're going to be doing a new one up in this coming fiscal year. And part of the concerns that we have, or what's been impacting the risk scoring there, is the past decentralization of technology, as well as several identified what they call single points of failures on key systems. And so those are the two pervasive. We've got several other top, what we call our top score risk scores this year. One of them is transit delivery and countywide planning. And this is related to the America Fast Forward initiative that anticipates completing 12 key transit projects within a 10-year period. And that you have an inherent risk when you have multiple projects competing for a limited pool of support staff, you may have some impacts. There have been ongoing mitigation discussions, but it's still considered a major risk. Operations made the high-risk group, and that's basically because of an aging infrastructure, which is coupled with a significant amount of deferred maintenance, which may impact the achievement of some of the CEO's key objectives. Metrolink has got a risk rating, or is in the top score, and this is based on concerns about availability of financial information, write-off of slow-moving inventory, and a lack of ongoing internal audits within their agency. They've continued to struggle to timely support external auditors' documentation requirements. Access services risk ranking increased because of concerns over the proposed legislation, or it's not proposed, it is legislation to change passenger service points from curb to curb to door to door. And that's going to potentially significantly increase operating costs, and access services budget increased by 14% from fiscal year 12 to 13. Expo is the last high-risk score, and that's due to some of the issues of the opening that had to do with getting it to ROD, as well as some major cost overruns in phase one, as well as project disputes. My proposed FY13 audit plan is developed on two key factors: these risk assessment results and the available audit resources. The audits included in this year's audit plan are focused on areas perceived to be high risk or mandated compliance audits. That concludes my presentation. If there's any questions.
Board members? Ms. Holden, can you recap again what those did you give five major risk areas?
Yeah, there's two pervasive and five majors. The five majors are the transit capital and planning, countywide planning. Is one, then operations.
And before you go on, in summary, can you tell us what that really means?
What that really means is we are looking at countywide planning and transit development are delivering these America Fast Forward projects. You've got planned 12 projects to be completed in a compacted 10 years. That's the plan right now. The agency in the past has usually done one major project at a time, and you're going to have multiple projects competing against each other for the same pool of support staff. So that's accounting, that's auditors, that's oversight people, that's all of those people are going to be having to prioritize multiple projects that are all priority one.
Now, in the measure of budget for those projects, those capital projects, are there dollars set aside to do the administration of these projects, i.e. the support staff, the oversight, the accounting, the administration?
What we've seen in the past is the board has approved direct line FTE, but have not approved any additional support staff FTEs to support these projects. There are discussions going on in the last year over how this is going to be done, and I know there's been some outside consultants looking at this, but it is a risk that needs to be addressed, or we need to take a look at to make sure that the projects are delivered seamlessly.
Continue on to the operations piece.
Okay, so operations has been in the high risk scores for a couple years. One of the things that it's been talked at the board but impacted its scoring is the fact that they're dealing with a fairly aging infrastructure, and they have some significant deferred maintenance on that infrastructure. We've seen in the past year some equipment failures that impacted service, and so their scoring went up significantly because of that.
So, like the blue line, that's our oldest line?
Yes.
Continue.
Then Metrolink is next, and that's based on what's currently going on. They're still struggling to get their data available to auditors in a timely fashion. They've got they wrote off some slow-moving inventory, and all of the agencies funding them took that hit. And they've got a lack of ongoing internal audits. They basically have not been doing what we do at this agency, which is send the auditors out to look at internal processes, identify risks, and put mitigating factors or put corrective actions in place to deal with that.
What do you recommend we do to not let that become a big problem?
I say Orange County and myself are working with the Metrolink CFO currently. We've been having open discussions. I've been trying to keep as much out of their process as possible. We do a consolidated audit of them every year. That's all the funding that we give them. I've got another internal audit that we did on the use of the TAP grant funds, and that audit's almost done. But to go in and do the audits right now when they're struggling to get their systems upgraded, they're doing a new financial system, can sometimes exacerbate the problem. They are on watch, basically, by us, but it's a very cooperative agreement, and we're working with them to try and find solutions to make sure that funds are expended correctly and that our funds that go to the agency are protected.
Mr. Katz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to add to what Ruth was saying that, you know, as everybody here knows that, and Ara also sits on the Metrolink board with me, representing this agency, that there have been a lot of changes in the last couple of years at Metrolink for the better that they had. I mean, we don't have enough time to go through all the systems they didn't have in place or they weren't operating properly, you know, going back to pre-Chatsworth days. And since then, there's been a huge push at the agency. There's a new FIS system that will be operational in the spring of next year, I believe. If not sooner, we're in the process of updating all that information so that this information, which, you know, when I say some stuff was in shoeboxes, it literally was in shoeboxes. But, you know, we're making a lot of progress. We want to get to the point where, you know, where Ruth can get her data easily, and same with our member agencies. So it's a work in progress. We appreciate the cooperation, but and we're making significant progress, and I think, you know, very shortly you'll see the results of 3 years of trying to clean up and turn that place around.
Part of my responsibility as the auditor is to let you know that it's a risk, but we're in a watch with them right now mode, as opposed to, oh, my God, we've got to get in there and fix it. They, as Director Katz said, they are making strides. We are watching. There's still some struggle with trying to get timely documentation to the auditors. There's consolidated audit draft that I saw. There's schedules that they weren't able to fill out because they couldn't get the information in time for the auditors. But as this new FIS system comes into place and they continue to change their and add to their internal controls. One of the things I know they had advertised for a counterpart to me, and that will be a definite step forward because that person will then be able to do the audits internally and we can just rely on them doing it. So there's a bunch of steps that they've been making, but they're still in the high-risk category for us.
So it's a high risk. One of the statements you made in your initial observation was a statement of transparency. What is that about? Is it that they just don't have the staff to do it and they're not reporting in a timely fashion, or is it that, you know, they're not sharing information that you need?
From them, they've told me that they are struggling with open positions that they haven't been able to fill, okay, and I haven't validated, so I'm caveating it. I'm not doubting their word. I'm just saying they've told me they have positions that are vacant. But it's also this old, everything was done manually. So this agency, you punch a button and you can get reports sliced and diced almost any way you need it, right? Everything's pretty much input as it's coming in. So all of the financials and the support documents are there, right? Metrolink has to literally, when you ask for it, go back to these manual spreadsheets, or they use Excel, but it's not in the way that you need it, and they don't have the supporting documentation. They have to go looking for it. So they really struggle every time we get auditors in there. And one of my concerns with that is this coming up year, this last year, they used Measure R money, and those audits are due December 31st, so I've got a meeting with them, I think, next week on my calendar to talk about the timing of that audit and can they get the documentation to us in time to meet the law's requirements.
Well, Metrolink is obviously an important part of this system, countywide and multi-countywide, and so it's important, and they're a good partner, I think, with what we're offering as a service. Do you think, and Mr. Casper, maybe you can chime in on this, would it be feasible for some of your staff to be loaned out or, you know, hired out to help Metrolink put in some of the systems that they need? Because that'd be terrible for us to get down a road where there's not the proper accountability with the public's funds, and then Metrolink will further be in jeopardy, and then we have to go in and actually start doing their work for them.
Mr. Chairman, if I had staff, I'd be happy to loan it to them.
No, her staff to you.
Oh, her staff to us. Oh, okay. No. I thought maybe there was something I didn't know about going on, and I'm happy to loan them as soon as I found them. I would defer that both to Nancy and to Janelle, who are here from Metrolink. Both.
Can you have them come up to the microphone?
Nancy, this would be Nancy, who is our CFO and doing a great job. But, you know, when we started digging into this after Chatsworth, we found stuff, I mean, the stuff that you just shake your head and wonder how they functioned. Metrolink had bought Oracle state-of-the-art financial software when it came out and had not updated it for 10 years. I mean, I don't know about your computer, but the update buttons are really annoying on mine, so you got to work to ignore that stuff. I mean, but that's really what they've been going through on top of all the other changes. So the new FIS system, the new accounting systems. But Nancy, if you want to address that, that'd be great. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hi, my name is Nancy Wyford, directors and chair. I'm happy to address this for you because some of the changes that Mr. Katz was talking about have really been enlightening in the organization. I've been with the organization for 10 months. So when I came in, I had been very accustomed to working with really stellar technological systems. And so I saw the progress that had been made. About 18 months ago, they installed a CIO in the agency who was very forward-thinking in terms of not only future state, but also what could be accomplished within the first 2 years. And that's how we moved to the financial information system upgrade that Mr. Katz was referring to. We've struggled in the agency, just as Ruth was mentioning about resources. When you have several key priorities in an agency, you tend to tap into some of the same support services and subject matter experts across all of those projects. And so that makes it a little challenging, but we are moving forward on the schedule that we've identified for that implementation by the spring. It won't be the magic button. I've not yet found a system that you can find that magic button, so if anyone knows that, I'd love to hear it. But it's certainly going to be light years away from our shoebox Excel approach now. And I think that's the important thing for us to understand. I wasn't sure if you were asking if Metro could loan people to us. Was that
I was asking if the Metropolitan Transportation Authority could share some of their staff with your shop to help you get caught up so that you can be on track, and that way we don't get into a position where you're not responding in the proper timelines and then you're putting in jeopardy your funding from Measure R and from this agency.
Well, let me address where we are today versus where we are a year ago when Ruth's engaged auditor came in to do the annual review of the MOU from Metro. And at that time, we had new staff, new management staff in place, and now we've got another year under our belt. What we've been able to do and make great progress in is a number of reconciliations that make a lot of sense in an agency like ours in terms of making sure that your grant funding is appropriately connected to your projects and your spending, et cetera. And we had not done as good of a job in the past at making sure that that was done on a periodic basis, so it became a scramble at year end. So I'm happy to stand here to say and thank my staff enormously for the work that they've put in over the last 6 months. So when we ended April, we had our reconciliations for all of our capital projects. We knew the spending, we knew how it was allocated, et cetera. So now we're moving towards getting the billings for reimbursement, improving our cash flow, et cetera. So I believe that when the auditors come in this year, both our external auditor for our annual CAFR report is going to find a completely different set of circumstances in the agency. So I think we've made tremendous progress. We certainly need a continuous improvement.
So in your view, you're okay, you have enough support to take care of the job?
I think right now, my management within the agency has authorized me with some temporary personnel to be able to augment, to get caught up in certain areas. I appreciate that. I have a couple of open headcount positions in my finance team that I'm actively recruiting. So I'm feeling much better today than 10 months ago.
Thank you. Ms. Holden, if you can continue. I think you have three other items on that, five, Heighten.
Two others, Director Wilson. One is Access Services. Their risk ranking increased significantly because of the change in legislation, which it went from a curb-to-curb service to a door-to-door service. And that's going to, or will probably significantly increase their operating costs. As an example or tie back to that, their budget this year increased 14% compared with last year's budget.
Is this federal or state legislation?
Federal.
Okay.
So that being able to control that cost, because we fund Access Services for the region, comes out of MTA.
Was that $230 million last year?
I don't have the number up, but I can get it to you today. So that's the second to the last, and the last one.
Go on. Was it the issues that you're concerned with, is it the capital costs? It's operating costs.
Operating expenses.
Because I've talked to some of the riders in Access Transit, and I've heard a lot of concerns and actual complaints lobbied because some of them are being pushed into small vehicles, as they characterize it, some of them are large people, and they've been pushed into small vehicles, and so they get to the destination to pick up the passenger, and they find out they can't accommodate the passenger. Now the passenger has to call, get back in line all over again. And so, you know, I think we need to look more carefully at how they're operating. And I don't know what type of oversight we have for the Access Transit, but it's a really important service that they provide. And I'm just concerned that they're not living to the expectation of a lot of their customers.
We have on this year's audit plan, once you guys have approved it starting next month, we have a performance audit, an overall performance audit of Access Services operating, their costs, their operating, their performance metrics, the whole thing. So we will be looking at it.
Thank you. And the last item?
And the last item is Expo Phase 2 project. And for multiple reasons, there were a lot of issues with opening ROD with them that had to be worked through. There were major cost overruns on Expo Phase 1 and project disputes that impacted it. So Expo Phase 2 is made it into the top six or the top five risks for this year.
Is that because of their past performance or what you're forecasting for their current and future performance?
Their past performance, we have them basically on a watch to see if they're going to change their business rules, et cetera, how they're doing it, to learn lessons from Expo Phase 1.
Mr. Leahy would like to take them back over.
They're established by state law, so we will work with them. I will note that when I arrived here 3 years ago, I was told that the Expo was not an MTA project, which I disagreed with. It most certainly is. We're the banker and the owner.
Bills, right?
We pay the bills. We pay 100% of the bills. We now have much stronger MOUs with both Expo and Goldline than we used to have. On Phase 2, there's actually a list of deliverables, which, believe it or not, did not exist on Phase 1. No list of deliverables on Phase 1. So on the goal line, we've required things like maintenance facilities, and so we're doing all that, and we're providing more day-to-day oversight of their project management and design. It's been difficult, but because they're accustomed to being completely independent. But we've made some progress. We're not done, but we've made some progress.
Board members, any other comments or questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
With regard on your conclusion about in the audit for Expo 2, when you say they're higher risk,
When you say they're higher risk, is that? I mean, besides the cost overrun, is that the risk?
We've got 17 risk categories, basically, and it's the five agencies plus the 12 functions, direct functions reporting to ART, okay? And so in comparison, I usually just slice off on the heat map about where there's a nice break in the risk. And so Expo was one of the top five that clustered up at the top, and it's for several reasons Expo was. I looked at what we went through to open the line, all of the issues and things that, and compared it with other line openings that we've had, because there's always going to be issues that have to be worked out, right? In addition, they had large cost overruns, and some of them, this is not an indictment saying that they're good or bad. They just had large cost overruns. There were some valid reasons for some of those overruns based on changes that happened during the construction of it. And the project disputes that they had with their contractors, some of which I understand are still outstanding or close to being closed, the combination of that put them at a higher risk than 12 of the other 17 risk categories.
And can I understand, let me understand. So that's because of what happened on Expo 1, Expo 2 is at a higher risk.
Yes.
That's what you're saying, right?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So I take it that we do audits to tell us, here's what happened. So if we're going to move forward, you take the information from an audit and you figure out how to move forward. Now, who's going to do that for me?
The audit of Expo?
No, not the audit of Expo. You're telling me from your audit that because of what happened in Expo 1, under the audit conditions, Expo Phase 2 has a higher risk level. And cost overruns is a part of it, amongst other things you said. So I want to understand, usually you take an audit, there are a set of recommendations or things to watch for, and then you have a plan, right, so that you don't stay at the high risk. So who's doing that plan? Who has that information?
Well, I think what we have here is a risk assessment that looks at where potential risk is, and so it's kind of like a watch report. So what this amounts to is it's been identified as an area of risk because of past performance, and therefore we have an audit plan, which is before you as well, that we asked the board to approve, and that plan will outline a series of reviews that we will undertake to address the areas of high risk. Ruth, is that correct?
That plan is here?
Yes.
Okay, so again, so what is one of the issues that would eliminate the risk involved in Expo Phase 2, particularly in cost overruns?
The Expo Phase 2 is an unusual animal in that the Expo board adopted, I think it was 2 years ago, that the MTA's Inspector General was basically their auditor. I still look at that because I don't, from the risk assessment, but I haven't put any audits in place on my plan to audit Expo because of that, because I don't want to step into.
I guess I'm saying, okay. I'm speaking in Spanish and you're speaking in Greek because I didn't understand what you said.
Let me.
Obviously, you didn't understand what I said. Let's start again.
Okay.
So are we talking about just audit functions? Is that what you're talking about?
You're asking for what's our plan, what's the MTA's plan to ensure that mitigate the risk at Expo.
Thank you.
Did I state that correctly?
Yes.
Okay, cool. From my perspective, I do, Supervisor Molina, I do audits, okay? So if when I would answer you, it would be what audits do I...
Is that where this is going to go eventually?
No, I hate that.
I know you do audits, but what I'm saying to myself, too, is that you've given us some information. It is there. So when you receive this information and you said, we should do something with it. So obviously, is there a plan to mitigate the risk of phase two? I had tremendous concerns with Expo 1 on various levels, particularly that Expo board isn't accountable to us. And the only safeguard we have is, I guess, when they come with cost overruns, we could say, no, I guess. But they have the votes here to override some of us that even ask a question. So I'm trying to understand. Shouldn't we do something with this, or are we going to just ignore it?
No, I think that's what she wants to outline is what we intend to do. So what the assignment of high risk would create a focus on areas where we think that risk lies.
So I'm asking the question. So what are they?
So that's what she...
Well, that's one way.
That's kind of outside of my authority, but...
But again, I understand. But your issue is that they are... I don't know what they're going to do, because who's going to pay for their cost overruns?
We are?
From where?
We discussed this in the past with our attorney, who has informed the board over the years, the last couple of years at least, that we are their sole source of revenue, and happy or not, we're going to pay the bills. That's the reason for what she's trying to get to, which
I know, but why doesn't somebody say it that plainly? Okay, I'll say it plainly for everybody here. We're stuck with them. We're going to pay whatever they tell us to pay. We're going to do it however they want us to do it. They're going to decide all of it, and we're going to stick with the bill. It's just like having this bratty child that decides to go around and destroy cars all day long. At the end of the day, as the parent, you have to pay for it, like it or not. Is that the situation here?
I hope not.
But it is. Isn't that what you're saying?
What we're seeking to do is to reduce the risk by providing closer oversight and audits.
Audits Expo.
The MTA has the authority to audit Expo.
Audited Expo.
I have not.
Why not?
For one of the reasons is that their board 2 years ago put a motion out and said that MTA's Inspector General's office.
No, you already went through that.
Okay.
Can you just tell me that can I say that I mandate that we
sure, you can make a motion, but we have an interim inspector general here.
But the inspector general is not. I mean, should they can decide they want to audit them? But
I think it's the board's prerogative to make a recommendation for an audit or not. I believe that the mechanisms are here. The question is, does the board want to do that? Do we want to take action to instruct our staff? Inspector General to do the audit.
I don't know yet all of the other risks, but it seems as though, first of all, we should do an audit. All right, so then we'll know clearly, potentially, what they did. My issue is that they're telling us that Expo 2, because of how they did Expo 1, is a higher risk. So shouldn't we have a plan to mitigate that?
Can I move those two things?
Ms. Holden, did you not say that the if I understood you correctly, Ms. Holden, I thought you said that the Expo Authority had gotten our board to adopt a policy to give the audit responsibilities to the Inspector General. Is that what I heard you say?
I believe, and Karen's coming up to help bail me out on this, I believe their board authorized, their board issued a policy that the empty, they were looking for audit backup. And correct me where I'm wrong, Karen, but from what I understand, they adopted their own policy that the Inspector General could do audits of them.
Can we have Ms. Gorman speak?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
It's my understanding that the Expo Board agrees that the Inspector General's office can conduct activities at times at Expo. It may be performing specialized audits, investigations, those sorts of things that we can provide those services to them, just like the Ethics Department sometimes provides the services. However, the routine audits, as I'll call them, such as contract closeouts, those kinds of audits, that's not the kind of audit that the Inspector General's office typically does. Those I would respect Ruth's responsibilities and territory to handle all those kinds of the regular routine standard
audits. Wait, you're giving me a lot of detail of something I never asked. All right, have you done an audit of Expo?
No.
When are you going to do it?
Not.
Why not?
Because I'm not the auditor of Expo.
Okay.
You just said that they were. You said they were.
As I understand it, they are, but I would be happy, Director Molina, to add, I've got hours on my plan set aside for special requests and things that Mr. Leahy needs, and I would be happy to put an audit together.
Stan, do you understand that? Because I don't want it later on. Is it what you're trying to tell me, and usually auditors are pretty good at reading the details of stuff, so they usually know their stuff. Are you sort of trying to tell me that the Expo Board could reject you doing their audit?
No, under the current MOU that we have audit rights. We meaning the MTA. So either Karen or myself could go into Expo under those audit clauses and audit them. I believe it's limited to one time annually, but I could go in every year.
So put that on the list.
Under the Expo
MOU. I would like
MOU.
To see an audit of Expo phase one and the beginning of an audit of Expo phase two.
Okay, that sounds like a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second for discussion.
Mr. CEO, I'm sorry, Mr. Donner.
Just, you know, part of my question, I guess, if we're going to do this audit, one of the things I'd be interested in terms of the crossover that seems to be still generating concerns, if we can get a sense of what was involved there and how we minimize risk there. And lessons learned, I mean, part of my understanding is that the second phase of Expo is being procured differently, which will probably minimize some of the risks that Metro faced from the way the procurement was done in the first phase. So, I mean, I hope that we kind of target the audit based on areas that we've experienced of concern where we think concern still exists. Going forward, recognizing where changes have been made and maybe where they still need to be made.
Thank you, Mr. Fasano. Mr. Leahy.
We will undertake the audit as described by both directors. And, you know, in the event, I don't think this is likely, but in the event Expo would decline to cooperate, we would bring that back to this board, this committee and this board, and discuss it. I don't anticipate they will do that, however.
No, I can't imagine them doing that. There is a motion on the floor to have the MTA instruct our auditor to audit phase one of Expo's operation in capital. And I believe, did you say also phase two?
Mm-hmm.
Phase two.
Is that as part of an amendment into the Zotta plan? Is that an amendment into the Zotta plan, basically?
It's an add-on.
Okay.
Okay, Mr.
Can I add one more thing, though?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I add one more thing, which is not for the auditor. This is for the issue of trying to understand, and maybe I could just do it my way instead of the way you did it. Could we have Mr. Leahy develop and maybe our CFO develop a set of policies as to how we can tell the child that we're not going to pay for any more of their misdeeds. Does that make sense? In other words, how is it that we're going to monitor how cost overruns are operating? Do we wait till it happens beforehand? Or let's say that we know from what you said of this risk that they have a lot of cost overruns because the board changes its mind. The doorway here, no, let's put the doorway over there, no, change the window over here, which incurs engineering problems. So are those the issues, or is it because nobody evaluated where the power lines are and the tunnel's going to hit the... We kind of need to know that, so that if we know we're going to go on... If there's been the past level of cost overruns on phase one, what will be the level of cost overruns under phase two? Because I take it not much is changing on various levels other than there might be a new contractor on it.
Well, I think the contractor being the procurement method in terms of how the risk is split out.
Exactly. So there somewhere has to be a plan as to if, in fact, this same thing happens, this is the level of what it's going to cost us. And then I think you and the finance have to figure out what project gets not built because of the cost overruns on Expo Line 2.
I understand what you're asking for, and we'll do that. I think we want to refine some lessons learned and apply those to this phase and ensure, although we're having increasing levels of oversight, that we have an early detection system, if you will, so that if something's going wrong, we'll identify that quickly. And I completely agree with and will accomplish what you've outlined. We need to do that because if we don't manage our projects frugally, we're going to exceed the measure of our budget. So we can't do that.
Okay, we have a motion. It's been seconded. There's been fully discussed. There's no objection, so ordered. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, sir.
Next item.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can you
get the electronics
yourself?
Working?
Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, sir, I can.
And your cohort?
I am Don Sepulveda, the Executive Officer of Regional Rail for Metro. I'm here to present to you, there we go, okay. Here to present to you our action item for the Metrolink annual work plan, annual commuter rail plan for our contribution to the Metro budget. And to amend the Metro budget for seven different items to accept the Metrolink budget here. So, real quickly to go through the background, Metro is a significant member agency of Metrolink. We do carry about 50% of the weight of Metrolink and their subsidy. It's a five-member agency JPA with the other four counties of Southern California, and Metrolink carries about 45,000 passengers daily. We started this budget process in the early part of this year, and Metrolink submitted a draft budget to us in April of 2012. Subsequent fare increases were discussed to address some funding gaps that existed in the budget, and the final budget was calculated after the fare increase hearings were completed. Metrolink board requested member agency input on a fare increase, and the member agencies each recommended a fare increase for the fiscal year 2012-2013, and this was approved. A 7% fare increase was approved by Metrolink to close some of these funding gaps. And if you look down at the bottom of that slide, that's an increase of the fare increase history for Metrolink over the last several years. The current proposed fiscal year 2012-2013 operating budget is a total of $196 million in expenses, $195 million in revenue, which means a member agency subsidy of $91 million, which MTA is responsible for about $46 million of that. This actually includes an 8% overall increase in operating costs over the 2011-2012 fiscal year, And the main issues on that are fuel is 21% increase. The Amtrak's nationwide contract impacted the Metrolink budget at 7%, equipment maintenance at 2%, insurance premiums at 4%, and transfers to other operators at 26%. The total LAMTA subsidy is $46 million for operations, $16 million for rehabilitation, right-of-way security at $2 million for a total of $64 million. Some new services that were authorized for 2012-2013 with very little impact to Metro, but include new Recon service and Orange County lines, new peak period Inland Empire service, and, of course, year-round Inland Empire Orange County weekend service. The rehabilitation for 2012-2013 we're looking at rehabbing the locomotives to improve emissions, looking at Tier 4 locomotives, some additional rehab on the Antelope Valley Line Tunnel, some turnout rehabilitation, additional transition rails and insulated joint replacement, information technology, and replacement of a rail car mover at CMF, the Central Maintenance Facility. So the recommendation, to summarize the 7 points in this recommendation, are to allocate $54 million approximately for operations, rehab, and right-of-way security, another $9.8 million for rehab and renovation, another $4.1 million related to Rotem stock, rolling stock acquisition, and that would be a reimbursement. In addition, we would like to extend the lapse date for some previously programmed rehab funds. This actually would extend this date for 1 year. Most of this work has been completed, has not yet been invoiced, and reprogrammed approximately $262,000 to upgrade the Broadway Brazil Crade Crossing project to overcome some funding gaps, and at the same time approve a transfer to other operators rate of $1.10 per boarding to MTA. Any questions?
Board members?
No questions. I'll move approval of the item.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Katz, do you want to comment on something that I asked?
In response to the chair's question, there have been no merit increases given at Metrolink in the last 4 years. Four years at all. There was a $680,000 retention pool that was created in last year's budget to try and hold on to people, for instance, the folks doing positive train control and others who are in high demand these days, because we are we are at the front lines of positive train control. Of that $680,000, $79,000, I think, was spent on retention. The rest will be reverting with this budget, at the end of the fiscal year, the end of this month. The remaining money in that, the remaining $570,000 or $80,000, will be reverting to the member agencies in proportion to in the formulas that exist, so that money will be going back to them. There were some increases that were associated with either reclassifications of positions, promotions, new responsibilities, those things like that. But other than that, there have been no merit increases, and certainly no across the board for 4 years.
Thank you. So they're on par with our agency?
Yes.
Okay. There is a motion by Mr. Fasana. I did not hear a second.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any other discussion? Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, my name is Nalini, and I'm going to cover item 20, 21, and 22. So, item 20, this is an allocation of subsidies to transit operators. We do this every year. The funds are going to LA County cities and MTA operations as well. Around $1.5 billion are included in the staff report, and they are made up of federal funds, DDA, SDA, Prop A, Prop C, Measure R. 50% of these funds approximately go to MTA, around 20% go to the municipal operators, and 25% go to the cities through their local return programs. We have had an extensive review process. It's been reviewed by all the technical subcommittees, and we request approval at this time.
Do I hear a motion?
I'll move it.
It's been moved.
Second.
And seconded. Is there any comments or questions from board members? We don't have any members of the public here at all, correct, that wanted to speak on any of these items? Thank you. Okay, it's been moved and seconded without objection, so ordered.
Item 21 is another allocation. This is $18.5 million in TDA Article 8 funds. These funds go to areas outside of MTA service area. State requires an extensive public review process. We've had four public hearings, and at this time again, we request approval of staff recommendation.
Second.
Any questions or comments? Okay. Without objection, so ordered. Next item.
Next item is a request to set up reserves for the city of Bell and Redondo Beach from their Prop C local return funds. And cities routinely do this to set up reserves for major capital projects. They don't get enough through their annual allocation. And again, that's all I have to say on this, and we request approval.
I'll move approval.
Second.
It's been
moved and seconded.
Well, you're pretty fast. Without objection, ordered. Thank you.
Item 23 was largely before the committee last month and inadvertently got approved on the consent committee in May. However, because it is a debt item, it needed to be acted on separately. Because the item carried forward and the federal government decided, instead of requesting an MOU, and that's in regards to recommendation B, they have decided to go directly to a grant agreement. We've changed the wording there, so we thought it was appropriate to bring it back through committee. This item, of course, are actions necessary to support the TIFIA loan, $546 million for the Crenshaw project.
May I ask the county council, do the board members who voted to consent have to ask for a reconsideration of the previous item, this item from last month, in order for us to take action on it today? This is item 23. I believe he said it was on consent calendar at the last month's meeting, so it went without any objections. He's bringing it back before us because of some technical issues. Do we have to reconsider the previous motion in order for us to vote on it today?
I think you can vote on this as a new item.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for clarification.
I'll move approval of the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, without objection, so ordered. Thank you, Mr. Matsumoto. Item 24. Mm-hmm. Did you post it on the? Does anyone want to make a motion here?
It's always good practice to evaluate our organizational structure, eliminate duplication of efforts. We've got to continually examine ourselves and audit ourselves to make sure we're not spending our precious resources unnecessarily.
I think the other items look like they've been removed. Is that correct? That from what was in the agenda, this motion does not include certain items.
Mr. Fasano, can you restate that? Because I didn't understand what you said.
The motion that was just handed out is different than what appears on the agenda.
The motion that's been handed out is not what was on the agenda. It is a revision of it. If you look at the items, the lines that are underlined, those are additions to that motion, but I need a motion on the original motion before I can go there.
Well, I want to clarify. My sense is that some items that were agendized prior are no longer part of this motion based on the item that was just passed out to us. I'm trying to understand. For example, does the first part does it go through F or does it go through D based on what was passed out?
The items that were underlined were not a part of the original motion that was agendized. So what I'm asking for today is a motion that your original motion, and I'm going to ask for an amendment that would be outlined with the underlined portions there to that motion. Pardon? So I don't have a motion. Or did you?
No, I
you move it. Then I need a second.
I move the original.
He moved the original.
Which one's the original?
The one that's on the agenda.
Okay, so not this thing that was just passed out?
That's correct.
I'll second.
Okay. Now, with that, I would like to speak to this motion and ask for an amendment to this motion. Over the last number of months, I've had the opportunity to meet with and talk with a number of our staff at various levels, at lower management and upper management, as well as folks in the on the contract basis. And what I'm finding out is that there is a sense of unfairness. People seem to feel that staff members who are being hired now are coming in at higher pay scales and a better package than those who have been here for a long period of time. And so what I'm seeing is that it's becoming an issue of a deterrent to good morale. And so what I'm trying to do here is get to how can we be fair, or at least take a closer look at it. And so if you'll take a look at item number E on the one that got handed out, Mr. Fasano, it says evaluate compensation inequities or disparities between new recruits and seasoned employees. Item F, establish criteria to compensate long-term valued employees who retain the knowledge and ability to build and train future employees in order to promote proper succession planning for the agency. And as you may recall, a few months ago, thank you, Mr. Katz.
Thank you.
A few months ago, we looked at a chart that talked about a likelihood where a number of our key staff could leave this agency due to a change in the pension contribution. And so there is a chance that we could have a number of senior staff folks leaving the agency. And so what I'm trying to do is get ahead of that. And the last item, Mr. Fasano, at the bottom on the back of this page, there's an underline that says resolving compensation inequities. So it's just a sense of fairness. What we want to do is, since we're going to be looking at the organizational structure, we ought to also look at the compensation arrangements between those who have been here for a long period of time, all of which have not had a raise in the last, how many years, Mr. CEO?
Three.
Last 3 years. And some of them feel a bit sour when other folks get hired on at a higher wage than they are. And they've been carrying the weight for all this period of time. And so all we're trying to do really is look at how we can make this, take a look and see if we can make it fair.
I'm all for breaking down silos and building new ones.
Thank you. So I would ask for my colleagues to agree to the. You're not one of my colleagues.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
I'm not. I can make a suggestion.
You may.
I think I would look at ask that as part of what you've just said, which I understand entirely what you're going to. That we look at an assessment of risk. For example, we should look at turnover rates by function, by type, to find out where we might have exposure. Higher levels of turnover would suggest higher levels of exposure. Lower levels of turnover might suggest otherwise. But that should be part of the calculation.
Okay. So is there anyone objecting to what I'm trying to add to this this motion? Do you have some comments? You're objecting? Colette, is this been, is this put up? Can you put this back up?
I'm doing it right now.
Thank you. That's what I'm asking for. Just amend.
I will move the revision. Wilson revisions to the original motion. Amendment.
Okay, there's a motion to revise the original amendment, the original motion. I get a second?
Second.
It's been seconded. Is there any discussion on it? Okay. Do you have discussion, Ms. Jackson? You'd like a copy? Okay. All right, so without objection, so ordered. Thank you. Item 25.
Good afternoon, Chair Wilson and members of the committee. My name is Greg Kildare, the Executive Officer of Risk Management. To brief you on item 25 and the progress on our excess liability insurance marketing efforts, our objectives for this renewal cycle included mitigating premium increases because of the addition of new operating exposures for both the Expo line and Orange line, and what is generally firming insurance pricing globally. We also sought to maintain our self-insurance retention at $5 million, despite efforts over the last several years by insurance underwriters to insist on an increase. And with increasing construction activity here at the MTA, we're also sought to improve construction-related terms and conditions in all of our policies throughout the insurance tower. Next month, I'm pleased to report that we will bring back to this committee our insurance purchase action listing final carriers and terms that show a flat premium despite service expansion, maintenance of our limits and deductibles, and improved construction insurance policy terms. That concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
An item for receive and file, I believe?
Correct.
Okay, then we'll move to be receive and file. Thank you. Item 26.
Good afternoon, directors. My name is Michelle Navarro from the Office of Management and Budget. This is a receive and file report on the progress of budget themes and performance metrics. This is in response to the board's motion to implement a performance management system, and we have developed metrics to measure performance of these themes. Today, we're providing you with the first performance review. Per the motion, we will provide a monthly update of the three core themes of improving bus and rail transit service, increasing emphasis on safety and security, renewed focus on customer service. The other themes will be reviewed at least twice per year or when new data is available. Executives are here to present their performance with the budget themes and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
So, Frank Alejandro for operations.
Are we going to go through this?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Frank Alejandro. I'm the Chief Operations Officer for Metro, and I got a whole 3 months seniority, so I'm very happy for that.
Congratulations. You made it.
My report today is just to
Mr.
give
Chair,
you...
He is on permanent double secret probation, nevertheless.
That's better than being at will, I think, which I signed that statement about five times. My report today is to just give you our year-to-date performance against the targets that were established for this fiscal year. And there are many categories, so I wanted to hit a few select ones and then discuss those and any others that you might want to cover or have questions, and I'm open to that. The first one I wanted to cover was our on-time performance for bus. The target was 85%. And as you can see throughout the years, we have made steady progress towards that number. I've worked at two other properties that had 85% goal, and that's a very hard goal to achieve. There's many things that prevent an agency from reaching that goal. We have tried and continue to try different methods to improve that. A few things that we've done is something, very simple things, like moving a near side bus stop, which is before the intersection, to the far side. And that by doing that, we avoid buses getting trapped by vehicles going around and trying to make a right turn in front of the bus and getting stuck with the pedestrians going across the street. So that's just a few things that we do to try and improve the on-time performance. We also look at the operators and making sure that they're trained and they're operating the line as safely as they can. A few other things, we've increased supervisory observation in-service onboard observations by our supervisors to see what issues they're having. We're also creating some task force with the management staff, the divisions, including the operators, to hear what suggestions they have as far as how we can improve our on-time performance. So there are a lot of things that we can do within our control, but we're also looking at other entities that can help us, like LADOT, with some traffic signal phasing improvements on certain lines. But the bottom line, I've been out there, and some lines, whether you're a bus or a car, you just get stuck in traffic. So those are some of the challenges. So we did look at some other properties and what goals that they have established. We found goals as low as 75 and as high as 85. So we're going to be looking at what target we want to establish for the next fiscal year. For rail, we have hit our target for rail. And we did have some problems on the blue line in February and March, but we have turned that around quite a bit. So when we get down to the maintenance portion, I have Mr. Lozano to speak to some of the actions we've taken to improve that. So, Mr. Lozano, can you come up here for just a minute?
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Richard Lozano. I'm the Executive Officer of Rail Vehicle Maintenance. Thank you. Not meeting target is mainly attributed to the Blue Line Expo fleet performance. We introduced the P2000 fleet, which is the Siemens cars that were transferred from the Gold Line to the Blue Line, and they required numerous fleet modifications to integrate with the both the Blue Line and the Expo line. So there was system issues, ATP, automatic train protection, and TWC mods that were required. Along with that, though, came growing pains from our staff, both from the operators as well as the maintenance staff. They were used to an old fleet. The Nippon fleet is over 20 years old. It's relay logic. It is not as sophisticated as the P2000 fleet, which is mainly electronics. And coinciding with the introduction of the P2000 fleet, we've discussed earlier the deferred maintenance on the Blue Line. We have implemented a component-level overhaul on that Nippon fleet, and we're addressing the gearbox, traction motors, as well as upgrading or changing the heating, ventilation, air conditioning system to work better. One other item that I want that I think is very important to discuss is we're reviewing and have reviewed the preventive maintenance program and upgraded it, so to speak, because this is an old fleet. We cannot continue to inspect it the way we used to when the car was new. So we've upgraded our and inspected our maintenance, updated our maintenance program to maintain to an older car. Are there any questions?
Questions? I have some questions if you don't. I noticed that on the first line item A, in service on time, we're about 77%, but our goal is 85%. You know, in riding the system and watching what goes on the lines, and this last week I had the opportunity to go out and meet with some of the operators at both Division 1 and Division 2. And I think some of what makes it more difficult for the operators to stay on time is some of the uncertainties about with respect to the passengers about the fares. at certain times of day, I understand that seniors have a certain fare and that it may change at another time of day. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yes.
Is there anybody here that knows? Is there anybody on our staff that knows? It seems like one of our passenger knows.
There is an off-peak rate. I don't have my fare book with me, but there is a different charge for the fare.
No one here, Mr. Leahy?
Apparently not.
Is there an operator in the audience? My understanding is that there is a difference. Is that Mr. Klugman?
Yes.
What did you say, sir?
It's a quarter off peak.
Right. That's what I thought. It was a difference in the fare. Thank you, sir. And what it creates some confusion because a passenger may come on and think that it's 25 cents, and later on it's a different time of day, and a discussion ensue about, no, it's not 25 cents, it's 50 cents. I'm just giving some examples. And that slows down the folks getting on the bus. And so that may also contribute to some of the lateness of these buses showing up at their stop on the prescribed time. I think you ought to look into it. I see some blank faces here. It makes me kind of wonder. So don't make me wonder about that. If you could look into it and find out, are there issues like this? And maybe what we can do is have some of you or talk to the managers, and in fact, why not talk to the operators and ask them their opinions about what's slowing up their buses, because I would imagine that they're going to get ridden up if they continually show up late. Is that correct?
Well, we...
Not generally speaking, because there are things out of the operator's control.
So we don't write people up for coming in late?
If they come in late, that's a miss out, and they'll be, if they need to be, suspended or terminated for that. When you are in traffic, you may be delayed. If you look at lines D and E, mm-hmm. what you see there is the biggest area of improvement in terms of on-time performance is E, the reduction of buses ahead of schedule.
Down no, they're from not 14. Running hot anymore.
Correct. Well, there's still 3%, which is higher than it should be. The reduction of late buses is down somewhat, maybe 10% down, but it's down 80% on buses ahead of schedule. This is an ongoing issue. I think we should look at what you're saying. If, I don't think maybe you ought to go survey of operators and find out what they say. Generally speaking, it's an article of faith with bus operators that they don't have enough running time and that we ought to add more running time because, that's just what they would like to have.
You know, I would say that we should be commended for not running hot or running ahead of schedule. But at the same time, there are areas that certainly need improvements. And who better to find out other than the folks who are taking in the fares and seeing, you know, what's holding them up? I think it's incumbent on the managers to meet with the operators, find out what their opinions are. It's amazing how the people who work the job can tell you how to make the job work better. But if you don't listen to them, I'm not saying you haven't listened to them. I just don't. The blank faces I see here makes me think you haven't gone out and talked to them. And I know you're new on the job 3 months, so we're going to give you more time to do that. But I would ask you if you could instruct your Madam Secretary. There's a member of the public that would like to speak. But my sense is that you ought to go out and talk to them. Find out what they recommend, and you'll find out that there could be some solutions that may not cost much money, but will certainly make our passengers much more delighted with our service. Mr. Klugman, you may.
I was going to provide some suggestions about it.
Go ahead,
sir. What holds up service? One of them is the tourist and I'm lost person. They get on, the driver stops and doesn't keep moving while this person is saying, does this bus go to this place and does it go to that place? Something they should have been asking the people standing next to them waiting for the bus. But they never do that. They ask the driver, who doesn't even usually live in the area where he's driving the bus. He lives somewhere else. And it's that's something that holds up a lot of people. And there's a lot of, let's see, what other things bother me? No, that's it's and it. To be honest, the wheelchair thing.
Mm-hmm.
On the, it takes a lot of time. It's I want people to have the rights to do it, but it can hold up service for 3 or 4 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Clubman. I appreciate your comments. So anyhow, this is not a beat up time. I'm just I was out there. I talked to some of them. I think it's a good opportunity for the operations division to go out and hear a little bit more from what the operators have to say with respect to what's slowing them up. Again, I want to commend you for the number of buses that are running hot and which will really clog up the system.
Okay. I have implemented a requirement to have regular wrap sessions to all of the divisions. I think you were a guest at one of them, so thank you for coming. We also have a focus group that we're going to reestablish and get input from the operators. And there are only 2 divisions I haven't visited yet, so I'll get to those very soon.
Thank you, Mr. Alejandro.
Okay.
Did you have any comments? Okay.
Can I just point out on line F, you see about a 6% improvement in borings per hour. That's a 6% improvement in efficiency, which is links to the earlier conversation we had on borings and fares. Frank?
Three. Any other comments, Mr. Alejandro?
Well, I just want to make a few comments on the
go ahead.
Customer complaints. We're implementing several measures and steps to try and reduce that. Again, increase supervision on board inspections and looking at the complaints and seeing what we can do to resolve those. So we have a lot of things that we're trying to implement to reduce those complaints.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Okay, back to Ms. Navarro. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You gotta go, guys.
That's right. I'm sorry. I got a couple more slides.
Okay.
Just focus on high points, please. Look at the line of F. We're going to lose the committee here.
Well, I think most of these items are receive and file, so if you continue on.
So I just want to mention that we reestablished the Operations Safety Steering Committee to address accidents. So we're looking at the data and targeting certain types of accidents and doing what we can to reduce that. So we're still above our target, so we hope that those additional measures will assist. We also augmented our training instruction department with additional personnel to hopefully improve our accident rate. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Alejandro.
Okay.
Civil rights.
Good afternoon. The Department of
Can you introduce
Civil
yourself, please?
Dan Levy. I'm the Director of Civil Rights Programs Compliance.
Thank you.
My department is a new one, so I don't have a lot of history up there. In terms of what we've been able to accomplish in the short time, firstly with the compliance review, we've resolved 3 of the 5 deficiencies, or we'll have by the end of this fiscal year. And we're hoping to have all the departments compliant with civil rights by the end of next fiscal year. We are now reviewing all the capital plans in terms of their ADA and Title VI compliance, and we do that in a timely fashion. So we're almost at the 100% level. And we are also in my area doing EEO investigations, equal employment opportunity investigations, and we are striving to get those all done within 180 days, and we're close, but not quite there yet.
Mr. Fasano.
No questions at this time.
Mr. Lena?
I don't understand. So we still haven't
gotten
anything from the feds yet?
We have. They have agreed that we've resolved three of the five deficiencies, and we're still waiting to hear. We've submitted a methodology for doing the equity analysis, and they responded yesterday after a month with three questions, which we answered yesterday, and now we're still waiting again. I met with them pretty regularly up until about 6 weeks ago. We haven't really, there's been no progress on, we've been waiting to hear from the Fed, so I haven't really had any opportunity to meet with them.
Can you tell us what the two that are not in compliance?
One is limited English proficiency, and we're kind of moving along on schedule on that. We just submitted to the federal government factors 2 and 3 out of a 4-factor plan. And so we're waiting for comments from them on that. And the other area is service and fair equity. And we have submitted the fair equity methodology. They've answered back with some questions. We answered those, and we're waiting. On the fair side, we submitted an equity methodology. They came back with comments, and we've agreed on how we will amend it. But they've also agreed that we don't have to do that until we do the service one first. So we're just in waiting mode.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Levine.
Countywide planning, Martha Wellborn.
Good afternoon, directors. Martha Wellborn, countywide planning.
Afternoon.
You have the screen before you there. I'd like to point out that the budget theme that our work addresses most directly is listed up there, that of advancing the bus and rail projects. And I'd also like to point out in Target 1 that the historic figure that we need to achieve is somewhere between 2 and 4% of the estimated project cost for our work. And our work, as you know, goes from the conceptual beginnings of projects through to the certification of the final environmental impact statements and even getting the record of decision. And all of the projects that you see before you there, you'll see the percentages in the second to the last column. All are well within the 2 to 4% bracket and are projected to come within that. One of them we're watching closely, I will point out, is the San Fernando Valley North-South Corridors project. But we're monitoring it, and we think we will fall right within the 4%. And then I have another page, which is... The issue with that project, as I understand it, is that at the very... Shall I wait until... Okay, back to the risks. At the very inception of that project, in 2007, there was a board-approved motion that granted $900,000 to the city of Los Angeles to do some studies of the four different streets that the north-south improvements were focused on to sort of do some conceptual engineering before we launched into our work. And so that was one impact, one layer on top of the funds that we needed to spend to do our level of work. And the other issue with that project is that the scope has changed a bit. We've added, in addition to looking at the Van Nuys corridor, we're looking at the Sepulveda corridor for light rail or BRT. The study's underway right now, as you're aware. So moving on to the next slide. These projects are actually, they're projects where we actually do the implementation as well. And so they don't have the 2 to 4% target. The target is 100% completion. We do planning, design, and construction on all of these projects. Actually, there are two projects. One is broken down into three phases. And these are all well within the target and schedules that they have been operating against. Happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Mr. Fasana, go ahead.
Yes. You know, I only have one real comment at this point. I appreciate the metrics coming back, but I think that when they touch on areas covered by other committees, I think they need to be jointly referred.
I agree.
The planning or the ops metrics need to be referred to those committees as well, so they're kept up in terms of how we're doing on the various metrics.
Why don't we direct the CEO to make sure that happens?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good idea. Thank you, Ms. Wellborn.
Transit project delivery, Mr. Murphy.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair and Board of Directors. My name is Krishnamurthy. I'm the Executive Director for Transit Projects. We have several projects, most of them in design and some of them in construction. To begin with the Orange Line extension, the construction is essentially complete. We'll be opening it next weekend of 29th, and that project is well under budget and ahead of schedule. Next one is the Gold Line Foothill extension. I am here reporting what we have been provided by the Gold Line extension. There are two phases to it. One is the bridge, which is in construction. The rest of it is in design. Based on their current completion dates, the final design is at 60% level, and the bridge is almost about 35 to 40% completion. They are at 25% of the budget at this point. On the Crenshaw LAX corridor, we are basically starting the final design on it. Not yet, but we'll be issuing the RFP to the four qualified consultant teams this Friday, and then they will work on the preliminary engineering, and after 5 months, they will come back with a cost for the project. Then we have to negotiate or pick the best bidder on that. Exposition, I think you had on phase one and phase two, you already heard the conversation on that before. If you need additional explanation, whatever I have, I'll be happy to provide. On the highway project side, for the county sound wall program, we are essentially 27% complete at this phase in terms of construction, and about 27% of the money is expended. We are pretty much matching the construction progress towards the money spent. And on the express lanes, we are approximately 59% completed in terms of funding. And we are also, in terms of expenditure, we are around 59.5%. We do plan to open the express lanes, the I-110 phase of it, in October of this year. And I-10 will be open February of next year. On the I-405 Sapulpura project, we have 51% of money spent. We are approximately 50% progress, and tomorrow I'll be giving an update on the issues associated with that. If you have any questions, I do have the project managers here, would be happy to answer.
Board members, I have questions regarding your first item, which is the Orange Line. Can you tell us, and I'm very pleased that we have a significant savings on the Orange Line. Can you tell us how that came about?
Several reasons. One is the advertising of that project was done at a time when the economy was not that robust. So we are a very good competition amongst the contractors. Number two, we had advanced the design quite a bit in-house in our preliminary engineering. So the engineering definitions were much more clearer for the contractor design builder. Number three, we had a dedicated right-of-way, so we didn't have to go and acquire the right-of-way parcels outside of us. So all those factors helped us to keep it within the budget.
So what do you recall what the original budget was?
$215 million approximately.
And what was the final expenditure?
We are about $61 million less than that. That's our estimate at this point.
So what percentage would that be?
25.
You say 25?
Approximately, yes.
Is that pretty common practice? I don't think so.
No, this is very unusual. This is very unusual.
Figure out, I can't get my fingers or hands around believing that it's 25% savings because of the economy. So it makes me wonder, did we overestimate the cost? Was there risk associated with it at the right level that it should have been? I'm pleased that it ended up this way, but I'm just wondering how did that happen?
We had previously done the Orange Line, previous Orange Line, so we had a very good lessons learned from that Orange Line, the issues that we associated with the BRT. So we were able to capitalize on that lessons learned and prepare these documents in a much better way. But our estimate was based on our experience of the previous Orange Line. So there was some conservatism there in estimating.
Mr. Patel, I take it you want to say something.
Yes, this is Hitesh Patel. I'm the project manager.
Bring the microphone a little closer to you, please.
Hitesh Patel, I'm the project manager. one of the other factor is that this project was actually in long-range plan to be delivered in 2016. And in 2008, when the locally preferred alternative was selected, the budget, in essence, was set based on conceptual engineering-level design, and the project was proceeding along the 2016 schedule. Measure R was passed in November 2008, and that's when the board staff directed us to accelerate the project, and we're actually bringing the project way earlier than the timeline that was established when, the costs were established for the project.
That's all good, but it doesn't explain how it came out.
Yeah, the other item is that when the costs were prepared for the project, this was based on 2008. If you remember, you know, Expo Phase 1 came in 2007, late 2007, for cost acceleration, material costs. And so the economy was different in those days when those estimates were prepared in early 2008. And we were able to capitalize on the downturn of the economy by accelerating the project upon passage of Measure R in a very short time, able to get a set of bid documents out in the street. We were also able to fully design the Lassam Bridge, was the critical element of the project, and delay the bid opening for the design build and roll the design bid build portion of the project into that contract. We achieved significant savings in that process.
So, Mr. Murthy, you said the lessons learned is what caused us to be able to have such significant savings, in that we had already a Orange Line 1.
Yes, sir.
This is Orange Line 2.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Patel, you're saying, if I understand you correctly, that we did some of the engineering ourselves on one of the critical components, which is the bridge?
Correct, yes. The bridge is a very complex alignment. It's a very skewed alignment to active railroad tracks. It's a very narrow right-of-way, and there were significant risks associated with actually getting approval to be within Union Pacific right-of-way, with a whole bunch of significant overhead power poles that had to be relocated to underground under the tracks, as well as Metrolink track relocation, at-grade rail crossing, and also rail signals. And all those were significant, and also we had to get approval from the PUC for a rail crossing. So those risks were mitigated by us, the staff, jumping on the design and getting all the approvals in a very short time. And we were expecting that we may have taken like a year or so, but we were able to do that in 8 to 9 months. And as a result, rolled that portion of the project into the design build contract. In addition to that, we had to enter into many various different agreements, such as the Union Pacific for easement rights to build within the railroad right-of-way, as well as with Metrolink to build adjacent to the tracks.
So, does anyone recall what the original contingency percentage was on this project?
I don't have that number. I'll be happy to get to you, sir.
Okay. So, in essence, the themes that I hear is that, one, we had more engineers on our side doing some of the work in-house, which took away some of the uncertainties from a contractor. Two, the state of the economy was depressed at that time, and as a result, we got better costs from the bids.
And also, I need to give credit to the city of LA for cooperating with us in utility relocations on a timely basis.
So
we were not delayed.
Department of Water and Power?
Water and Power, BOA, BOT, DOT, all of them cooperated, so that definitely added to our construction cost mitigations.
So does it make also make sense that if we're building a second leg of the Pasadena Foothill line and the second leg of the Expo line, that the lessons you learned from there and the economy is better than it was in 2006, yes, or actually 2008,
all right,
that we should also have these kinds of savings?
I cannot speak for the contract document, the level of engineering they did. Whenever there's a better contract definition, engineering issues are addressed, we can always get a better bid. So maybe I need to get more information from them before I can answer the question.
All right, I'll expect you to get back with me on the contingency on this.
Yes, sir.
Is there any other parts of your report, sir?
No, I think that concludes my report.
Okay. Mr. Fasana, Ms. Molina, this is not an issue that is necessarily germane to this committee, but I've talked to a couple of our colleagues on the board regarding the construction operations, construction division, and the costs associated with it. And one of the things I'm working on is to come up with a plan that would set some goals for reducing the contingency level in all construction contracts. I believe, and I think it's been proven over a period of time, that oftentimes we give this is the national standard for the contingency factor for a contract, and without taking into account the level of risk. This was a BRT. The level of risk should have been significantly lower for this type of project versus a deep bore subway project. However, the contingency level seems to be the same no matter what type of contract it is, other than maybe a sound wall. So, Mr. Murthy, I'd asked you before to help us understand more clearly how we can get our hands around setting some goals for the contingency measures with respect to the contingencies on construction projects.
Yes,
and
sir.
I think that if we can do this, Mr. Fasana, what I've looked at is if we start counting the $30 billion of projects over the next 10 or 30 years, depending upon whether we get America Fast Forward or not, and if we just save 2% on the contingencies, we're talking about billions of dollars that could be saved and then could be put back into the region from where that project was built and used to enhance a project or accelerate a project.
You know, I think that works well if we can accomplish it. If we can look at best practices and lower those costs, that's fine. I think the Gold Line's operating with a fairly low contingency, and provided that they can manage to their budget and come in okay, then we'll see how that works in that particular case.
Thank you. Ms. Molina, did you want to address any of this? Okay. All right. Mr. Murthy, thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Last is Highway Program Delivery, Doug Failing.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. These are the goals that we're working with on the highway program: support costs between 2 to 4% of estimated project costs, and then a comparison of project cost to expenditures. Next slide, please. This is the slide for the highway program that we are currently tracking. All of our numbers fall within the program goals that we've established there. A couple of key points, though, that we are working on. One is to always ensure that the agencies — These are projects we do not deliver internally. We do not get monthly billing from our contractor. So we have to work with the cities and other entities to make sure the bills come in on time, so we are tracking them appropriately. We have a process in place to do that. Some of the programs you see here are actually programs of projects. So there's a multiple project for it. For example, Line 4, Highway Operation Improvements in Arroyo Verdugo, is actually a list of 20 projects. Those types of projects are actually an ongoing developed projects, and we continue to work with them to develop those. We bring those lists to the board for ratification as they are developed. We work those on a quinquennium or a five-year cycle basis. The inception to date costs, ITD support costs with a note TBD, indicates to us that there have been no metro charges on that at this point in time. That makes no sense to me in a few of these cases. We are working with our staff to focus again on charging practice, because I know staff has been working on these projects. And as we continue to improve the inception to date costs, we will be including fringe and indirect labor costs in addition to the direct labor costs you see on this chart today. So I'm here if there are any questions, sir.
Can you speak to the progress and the target as it relates to the 405 freeway project?
The 405 freeway project is being monitored by Mr. Murthy. It's a contract that's been let internal to Metro. He had a slide up. It was on to the previous slide. I think he showed a 56% complete. He went in there. Can we back up a couple of slides? Thank you. The 405 Sepulveda Pass Improvement Project, he has a 51% construction complete and a 50.3% expended on that report. That project, since it's a Metro-let contract, is being monitored and reported on by Mr. Murthy.
And on the timeline, you have June 2013. Is that still on track?
I would defer to Mr. Murthy and Mr. Barber to report on that. There's a lot of work
to
do
out there.
They
leave the room already?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I would like to.
We can try and track. I can send a runner.
Ms. Try Molina, and track them down.
I'm sending a runner out to see if we can track them down for you, sir.
Can you speak to the issue? Ms. Molina would like to know more about the cost overruns on the 405 project.
We're going to get a report on the cost overruns.
Yeah, I believe Mr. Murthy and Mr. Barber are working on that. You know, I'm not tracking that project as a part of my portfolio, so we're sending a runner out for that. It is a good project. It's an important project, sir. That's my comments on it.
How is it that you got to not do one of the big projects?
This project came and started here at Metro before I existed, and there was a highway department. It was assigned to Mr. Murthy, and when I came, we chose to not change anything like that.
Mr. Patel, is Mr. Murthy in the building? You got to catch the train.
My runner was unable to locate Mr. Murthy.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Failing. Is there anything else on your report?
No, sir.
Okay. Perhaps we can get it, Ms. Molina, at the construction committee.
Sure.
And I will make them aware of your request, Director Molina.
Mr. Fasana.
Just that, you know, I think there is talk in terms of the construction authorities. But on the highway side, I think there are also many pass-throughs from Caltrans. So understanding how that process works and... Again, maybe it seems that usually we have to accept was received through there, but certainly is an item of continuing interest to this board.
Same here. Thank you. Thank you. Sir. Thank you, Mr. Fasana. Ms. Navarro, are you
that
done?
That concludes the presentation.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, are there any other items on this agenda?
Oh, please say no.
All right. Board members, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Been moved. Thank you. Thank you.